This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
I'm Beth Golay, and this is Marginalia, the podcast where we visit with authors about information located beyond the pages of a book. This episode features an interview I had this week with Marie Benedict. Her book, The Other Einstein, is a historical novel about Mileva Einstein, who was not only Albert's first wife, but was also his scientific partner. Although she was a brilliant physicist in her own right, her contribution to science was often lost in Einstein's shadow.
Mileva met Albert Einstein, we think, on her first day at the Swiss Polytechnic University in Zurich. It was a school of higher education, challenging to get into, and it was a school, their particular class was focused on math and physics, but it was a school that trained students to become teachers or professors. That was really the focus. So it was very learning intensive. Although, of course, you could take the learning there and do something practical with it, like Einstein did for many years when he worked in the patent office in Bern in Switzerland.
Now, what kind of research did you have to do? Did she leave behind a lot of papers?
Great question. Of course not. That would make it so easy, and probably somebody would have written about her before. Mileva, so as you mentioned, her story is the story not just of Einstein's first wife, but it's really the story of her own. I really think of it as a meteoric climb. She was born in backwater, misogynistic Serbia, which at that time was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It was illegal for women to attend high school in their region, let alone university. And she was born with this congenital hip defect that gave her a really noticeable limp. And, you know, all of these things really were amazing hurdles, but the limp in particular in her society, that physical defect labeled her and made her considered to be unmarriageable in their society. And that was sort of, in a way, a curse and a blessing because her parents always would perceive her as being incapable of being married, as really being a spinster for the rest of her life. And when her father realized she had this amazing intellect, the fact that she was never going to be married almost gave him license to pursue her education. He really had to become an advocate on her behalf so that she could attend high school and then university. But it was really that that backdrop which launched her into this really unusual, singular position of becoming one of the very first female physics students at a European university. Now, none of that really answered your question about the research and papers about her, except to say that given where she grew up and who she was, there wasn't much of a paper trail. The region in which she grew up in the Austro-Hungarian Empire changed hands many, many times over. She grew up culturally Serbian, but the country borders of the regions that she grew up in shifted over time. Because that region was so rife with warfare over multiple decades, the paper trail is largely gone about her. Now, that said, you would think that being the wife of Albert Einstein, you know, there would be tomes written about her because, as we know, there are tomes written about him. But there isn't. There's if she figures in a biography, it's really backdrop, footnote type stuff. And so I had to kind of look outside the box to find information about her. There are a couple really excellent books by journalists which involve her, although she's not the focus of them. And we have letters between Albert and Mileva, which are really form the core not only of my research but of uncovering her voice.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. These letters were, you know, discovered, weren't they like in the 80s or something? And didn't it kind of shock that world a little bit because it proved that they were scientific partners?
Exactly. So, as I mentioned, there really wasn't much of a paper trail about Maleva, both independently and even in her relationship with Albert. And in the, as you mentioned, Beth, in the 1980s, this little trove of letters was, it had been in a relative's box in a closet. It was, whether they knew they had it or not, I'm not sure, but it came to light. And these letters take place in the 1890s and early 1900s, and they're letters just between Maleva and Albert. And they're at the beginning of their relationship before they're romantically involved, when they're just classmates. And then they stretch the time when they're classmates and they're beginning their relationship, so you get to see the beginning of their affection for each other. During the course of their university years, when they would be parted during a break or the summer, and then in the early years of their marriage and their relationship post-university. So it's an amazing insight into their lives. And it shows, like you mentioned, that they had not only this amazing emotional attachment, very passionate feelings for one another, but they were really knitted together by science. That they both, you can see in these letters how much they both love physics and math and whatever the latest scientific theories are in any area, how they talk about them, they share them, and how they have these independent projects that they work on with each other, separate and apart from their schooling. And those letters that have phrases like our shared work on relativity really ignited the physics community for a time with debate over what her role was in his theories, especially the theories that he published in 1905, which is considered by many to be, they call it his miracle year, when he published four theories, physics theories, that formed that really were groundbreaking and formed the basis for modern-day physics. And she was his wife at that time, and he was working full-time at the patent office, and they sat across the dinner table from each other every single night and afterwards. And one can begin to imagine, once you read these letters and you see that they spoke the language of science to one another, you can begin to imagine a collaboration.
You know, there were a couple of times in the book where Albert would have something published or an award given, and it was his name alone that would be listed instead of the two of them, even though they had worked on some of the things together. I'm assuming you were speculating about the conversation at the dinner table.
In terms of the attribution for the paper?
Yes.
Well, yes, I speculate. You know, the reason I love writing fiction about historical things is because it allows us to fill in the gaps that we can't possibly know. You know, we can know where people were at a particular time and the events that might have transpired, but we don't actually know about so many conversations and so many thought processes. And that's where fiction is such a gift for me personally, although the letters really do give us a good insight into some of it. In terms of the attribution, there was evidence uncovered that by one of the former editors of one of the journals, the physics journals that Albert published in 1905, that said that when the paper first came in, I think it was the relativity paper, there were two names on it, and one was hers. And that by the time, they don't know what happened, but between the time of submission and the time of publication, but by the time of publication, her name was no longer on it. And so what I did was I took this fact, it was a recounted conversation, and I ran with it. And I imagined how she might react to finding that work that she had done with him was not credited. And, you know, she was in an odd position because even though she had the same education as Albert, because she failed her exams, which I really believe, although I don't have firm evidence of this, but she was newly pregnant when she took those exams. And her physical condition, her hip defect, made pregnancy and childbirth extremely challenging for her. She was very sick during those times. And I can only imagine both the physical and emotional distress she would have been in, newly pregnant, sitting for her exams, and failing those exams. And as a result of that sort of catastrophic combination of events, she was not able to perform work as an actual physicist because she didn't receive the credential of her final exam. She took all 4 years. She had the same education as Albert, but she didn't have that credential. And as such, it would have been very challenging for her to submit papers on her own, especially as a woman. It would be like trying to practice as a doctor without a license, even though you had all the training, right? And so she was really forced to, any scientific ambitions and interests she had, she was forced to pursue them via her husband. Obviously, at some point, both of them thought about the idea about putting her name on a paper. That's how that conversation arose, that interview in which the former editor of the Physics Journal acknowledged that that her name had appeared as the author on one of the papers, and then something happened, and we don't know what that was.
You did such a beautiful job of blending fact with fiction in that I mean, so many times during the book, I would want to go look up, okay, was this fact or fiction? Not that I needed to know, but I kind of needed to know.
I know.
Exactly.
That's the greatest compliment a writer of historical fiction can get, is that you have spurred on somebody else's investigation into a time or place or person. And I consider that a huge compliment. So thank you.
Well, sure. But I mean, like all of the pregnancies that you outlined in the book, they all were not legitimate, but they all occurred. I mean, yeah. She lost her first child, and we're not exactly sure if it was scarlet fever, as was indicated in the book, but she did lose her first child. And did Albert Einstein never see that first child?
Never saw the child, as far as we can tell. So, you know, not too much of a spoiler, but you're right. She's 3 pregnancies, 2 legitimate, 1 illegitimate. And that illegitimate pregnancy really derailed her life. You know, it forced her, I speculate, it forced her to perform poorly on her exams and then put her in this bizarre holding pattern where, you know, as the mother of an illegitimate child in Eastern Europe or Europe anywhere in the 1800s, that's a huge red letter, right? I mean, that's like putting scarlet letter on your chest. So she really had to wait for Albert to marry her to sanctify her life in any way. That pregnancy took place. We learned about that pregnancy from those same letters from the 1980s, the same letters that were discovered in the 1980s. They referenced the baby throughout, and that's how we also learned that something happened to that baby. We know that Albert never saw the baby because there's no record. The baby was born, Lizaro was her name. She was born in Serbia in her parents' summer home in Novi Sad. At the Spire. She stayed with that baby and her mother until Albert summoned her back to visit with him in Zurich, where she stayed until he finally agreed to marry her. And there's no evidence that he ever visited that child, even though he had ample opportunity and ability to do so. We know the baby was sick because there's evidence of her rushing home because the baby had scarlet fever, and the baby is never heard from again. We don't know what happened. And in fact, there's a great nonfiction book called In Search of Lizaro, by a journalist, which is exactly that, trying to find out what happened to Lizaro. And she was never able to determine it. I mean, I think the conclusion most people reach is that probably the baby died from complications of scarlet fever. And then she had 2 children, legitimate children, with Albert, Hans Albert and Edward.
I know this probably wasn't your intention, but this book paints Albert Einstein as a complete ass.
Yes, that was not my intention, but when I told the story, well, 2 things about that. First of all, when I told the story through her eyes, that is the inevitable outcome of their relationship. I mean, he was, at the beginning, as you read, charming and charismatic and engaging and obsessed with her. And you can see how she was really, you know, really lured in by him. And as the relationship progresses, he became cruel. And especially the conditions he issued to her at the end of their marriage, upon which he would agree to stay in their home. You know, it was just barbaric. But of course, this is Mileva's story. And there may have been contributing factors in his behavior, but I'm not telling his story. His story has been told so many times by so many biographers and fiction writers. I really felt her side of it deserved to be told. But you're right, I didn't set out to paint him in a bad light. The way the story progressed, I almost didn't write it for that reason. He's such an iconic figure, and people have so many preconceptions about what he was like and who he was, and they very frequently remember him in the latter years of his life, the sort of benign, wild-haired, grandfatherly physicist who's issuing these profound statements. They don't know about this part of Albert Einstein. And that really was a deterrent for me, because I didn't want that, you know, that's a big hurdle to surmount. But the more I spent time with Maleva, you know, in the research, the more I really felt like she deserved her side of the story to be told. I really did.
And I should probably correct that and say you didn't paint him as an ass. He did that to himself, really.
He did do that to himself. And to be honest, I softened a lot of stuff. There were other things that happened that I took out. I really didn't want to highlight every bad thing. And I also didn't want to paint her as an utter victim. I mean, there was a reason she stayed for all those years, you know, despite his dalliances, despite his mercurial behavior. There was a very intriguing part of Albert Einstein, and loving and charismatic. And they had this scientific collaboration that she was not going to get anywhere else because she had failed her physics exams. If I focus too much on the negative, you would end up pitying her instead of rallying for her. And I didn't want the readers to feel that way about her.
There was a section in the book when she met with Madame Curie.
Mm-hmm.
Was that fact or fiction?
They really did meet.
Okay.
Albert spoke. Albert knew her. They had been at many scientific conferences before. And to his credit, he was a big supporter of her. I reference it very obliquely in the book, but there's a fascinating part of Marie Curie's life after her husband died. And her husband was the husband Maleva wanted and deserved. You know, Marie Curie's husband collaborated with her and then championed her in their collaborations. You know, he insisted that she, in one of her initial receipts of the Nobel Prize, he insisted on her credit. And, you know, I think Maleva was probably always very envious of that, because if she had had a different husband, her outcome might have been different, right? But I digress. We know that Albert Einstein and Marie Curie were friendly. We know that he and Marie stayed at her house in Paris when he went to go speak in a conference. And we actually know, I didn't talk about it in the book, but they went on a hiking holiday together in the Swiss Alps as a family, as two families. Maleva had a reasonable amount of exposure to Marie Curie. And I imagined, although I don't know this for certain, that she really looked up to her and admired her. You know, she had the career that Maleva would have longed for. There were so many parallels in their lives. They were both Eastern European women who, against all odds, received higher education in scientific fields. But for Maleva's derailment, maybe she could have had a career like Marie Curie. And that conversation that I put in the book is entirely imagined, but researching Maleva and thinking about what she would have thought about Marie Curie and thinking about the kinds of things that Marie Curie had said about being a parent, about being a woman in a male field, I kind of merged the two to make a conversation. Certainly, they had many conversations.
To me, it was that conversation that almost strengthened Maleva's resolve, especially when she said, "You and I are not so different except in the choices we've made and the husbands we chose, of course." That sentence really stuck with me. And it seemed, I don't know, it seemed like that's what kind of turned her mind to think, okay, well, I can be who I am without Albert Einstein.
Right.
It seemed like, I don't know, to me, that was the strengthening factor she needed
to make the choice
to leave him.
And I think Helen helped her a lot.
Oh, right.
There are amazing letters, not just the love letters, but there were letters between Helen and Maleva that one of Helen's descendants gathered and put in a book. I think they may be one of the only ones that aren't owned by Hebrew University and Princeton and Cal Berkeley. They have all these letters, and they're all online on this wonderful website, which I reference in the back of the book. But one of Helen's descendants had letters in his collection, and he wrote a book as well. And it's a really interesting take. It's really about the relationship between Mileva and Helen and their backgrounds and some anecdotal family stuff, which, you know, there's no specific proof or letter for, but you really get a different sense of things. And Helen was really an amazing support for Mileva. And in fact, there's a letter from Mileva between the two of them, which I sort of reference in a very oblique way in that conversation where they have in the cafe, where I think, which also emboldened Mileva, in which Helen says, "I don't like your husband anymore. Mm. He's not the person I thought he was." And I think Mileva needed to hear that. She needed to hear that this isn't right. You know, even though in her gut she knew that his treatment of her was inappropriate and terrible, she needed someone else who was close with her to say, enough, this is enough. And then, of course, Albert really forced her hand with the conditions mm-hmm. that he issued to her in Berlin. And those are accurate. In fact, they're way worse than what I put in there. They're horrible.
Her history with her parents, was there a lot of research? I mean, was there a lot of information available for that, or was that imagined as well?
That came from a few places. You know, I think I mentioned the journalistic book about In Search of Lazarus. Mm-hmm. So the woman who did that book, and that book was written, I think, in the 90s. I'd have to confirm that, but it was written at least 15 years ago. And she went back into Eastern Europe and interviewed a lot of people who, while they may not have known because of the age and the time, Mileva's family, they knew of Mileva's family and knew a lot of anecdotes about the family. And so I used those to help me. Again, things you wouldn't be able to say definitively in a biography, but can give color to a story in fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true of the book by Helen's, I think it's her grandson, Popovic is his last name. Again, anecdotal stories. Some of the things he remembers, but a lot of them are told to him secondhand. Some of those things are also referenced in a biography called Einstein in Love, which is a little bit about his relationship with Mileva and other loves of his life. So I kind of drew on a lot of anecdotal evidence. There's not a lot of written material, as I mentioned. I mean, going back, the journalist who did the search for Lazarus, you know, the war really ravaged so many records from that time period. But a lot of secondhand references and recollections really concerned. And her father really was her champion. Without him, there's no way she would have been able to attend high school or university. And I imagine their relationship to be such an unusual, strong one. For a father from that time period to recognize an unusual intellect in his daughter and really champion it, that was really rare. The book obviously is historical, but it's also really a modern story as well, for better or for worse. You know, as I concluded it, I realized that it's really the story of so many women whose ambitions have been marginalized in favor of espouses or in favor of, for example, in the technology and science field, where women's participation and contribution have really been swept under the rug for so many years. And, you know, to me, her story, Mileva's almost emblematic of so many women whose contributions, whether it's to the sciences or another profession or even their contributions in the home, have really not been told. They've really been unsung. And in that way, I think Mileva stands as a symbol for so many women. And that's something that I hadn't intended when I started to write this story. But as I concluded it, I realized that her story was important for other reasons as well.
That was Marie Benedict, author of The Other Einstein, which was published by Sourcebooks.
Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover new episodes at kmuw.org or through iTunes. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our editor is Luann Stevens. Our engineer is John Cyphers, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.